It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. A Greek default looms. Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras says he will respect the outcome of an upcoming referendum on his country's economic future should voters back a new round of European austerity measures. But he added his far-left government will not be the one to carry out those reforms demanded by the country's European creditors in exchange for billions in new bailout money. In an interview broadcast Monday, the Greek leader said the cost of dismantling the eurozone will be enormous, and that's why the European Union won't let Athens go, which default Tuesday could lead to. European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker seemed to agree.
I will never let the Greek people go down. Never. And I know that the Greek people don't want to let down the European Union. Greece is a member of the European family. And I want this family to stand together.
Greece is on the verge of defaulting Tuesday on nearly $2 billion in loan repayments due to the International Monetary Fund. Burundi held parliamentary elections Monday despite opposition boycott and criticism from the UN and African Union, questioning the free and fair nature of the vote. Election officials say voting went smoothly before polls closed, but reporters say there appear to be few people at polling stations. Amy Javier Amana didn't participate because he opposes a third term for President Pierre Nkurunziza, a decision that sparked violent street protests, some officials fleeing the country, international condemnation, a coup attempt in May, and a refugee exodus. Critics say the president is violating the two-term limit in the Constitution. The presidential vote is set for July 15th. This is VOA News. A car bomb killed Egypt's top prosecutor Monday, destroying his convoy as he traveled to work in Cairo. Hisham Barakat, the most senior state official killed in militant violence since the country's Islamist government was toppled 2 years ago. He had led the prosecutions against figures from the Muslim Brotherhood and other Islamists, including former President Mohamed Morsi. A senior U.S. administration official says Iran nuclear negotiators are not looking for a long-term extension to talks that had an original deadline of Tuesday, but the official said it would be no surprise if negotiators missed the deadline by a few days. Negotiators have been tight-lipped about details from the talks. The sticking points are believed to include access that inspectors from the UN's nuclear agency would have to Iranian sites, as well as the pace at which sanctions against Iran are lifted. Laurent Fabius is the French foreign minister.
The aim is summarized in the beginning of the text we are working on. Quote, under no circumstances, Iran will never get, nor keep or acquire any nuclear weapon. Under no circumstances. It means that so far as civil nuclear energy is concerned, it's quite okay, no problem. But so far as the nuclear weapon is concerned, the answer is no.
There have been concerns about managed access, how quickly International Atomic Energy Agency inspectors could be cleared to visit suspected nuclear sites. President Obama offered his condolences to his Tunisian counterpart following last week's terrorist attack at a tourist resort in which 38 were killed, including as many as 30 British tourists. Dozens were wounded. British Home Secretary Theresa May joined her Tunisian, French, and German counterparts at the site near Sousse of last Friday's attack.
What happened here last Friday was a despicable act of cruelty. How could a place of such beauty, of relaxation and happiness, be turned into such a scene of brutality and destruction? And we have had a meeting this morning with my Interior Minister colleagues, which has shown the determination that we all have to fight against this perverted ideology that is causing this death and destruction.
Meanwhile, Tunisian authorities have announced the arrest of 7 alleged accomplices in the attack. The lone gunman was shot and killed by police. Former Zambian President Rupia Banda has been cleared of corruption charges related to an oil procurement contract. Mr. Banda had been accused of benefiting from a government contract with Nigeria to the tune of $2.5 million. But a court magistrate ruled there was no evidence of wrongdoing. He served Zambia from 2008 to 2011. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, June 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Burundi's ruling party is happy with the turnout in Monday's parliamentary election.
As I told you, elections are for Burundians. As long as Burundians have seen that these elections were well organized, I think we are more concerned than others.
Pascal Yabenda is the chair of Burundi's ruling CNDD-FDD party. The reinstated Secretary General of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement says a peace deal to end 18 months of conflict is at hand. Escalating political violence in Lesotho jeopardizes trade deals, and former Zambian President Rupi Abanda has been acquitted of corruption charges.
From the beginning, he did state that this was merely a political witch hunt and that there was nothing in terms of an offense, and the ruling today bears that out.
Sakwiba Sikoto is one of the lawyers representing former Zambian President Rupi Abanda. The DRC will train former child combatants and sexual abuse victims, and a United States congressional staff delegation visits Zimbabwe. Those stories, plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Burundi's ruling CNDD-FDD party says it is happy with the turnout in Monday's parliamentary election, despite an opposition boycott and criticism from the United Nations as well as the African Union that the atmosphere was not conducive for free, fair and transparent vote. Party chairman Pascal Yabenda says Burundians defied calls by the opposition to boycott the elections because they prefer democracy to coup d'etat. He dismissed African Union and international community criticism, saying the government organized the elections for Burundians and Burundians came out to vote. Yabenda says the presidential election scheduled for July 15 will go ahead as planned.
For the CNDD-FDD, we appreciated the elections of today because there was a very good participation for the population and the security was everywhere in the country, so which means that we are very happy of this event of elections of today.
Some of the information we get is that there was a poor turnout.
No, it's not true. It's not true because, as I said, we are very happy of the participation and we are very happy that people were free to move, were free to go to vote. So which is good for democracy.
For democracy, we hear that the opposition people boycotted the election.
Yeah, you know, it was expected that they don't come. But what is surprising people is that we see that Burundians want democracy. Even if their leaders say that don't go to vote, but people went to vote, which means that maybe there is no connection now between the leaders and some members of some political parties. It is very strange here in Burundi. So people went to vote. Why? Because maybe they don't want the coup d'etat. They don't want these instructions which are given by their leaders. They just want democracy. They like their country more than their leaders.
The African Union did not send observers there and even the European Union. So that does not concern your party?
You know, elections are for Burundians. Elections were organized by the government of Burundi, and those people who went to vote were Burundians. So, as it has been done in Ethiopia, in Burundi, we did good elections, and someone who would like to say that his elections were not transparent, were not fair, I think he would be wrong, because as all people have seen, even UN has sent some observers. Some countries like Kenya sent some observers so that they were very organized elections.
Does this mean now the presidential election will go ahead as planned? Because there's a call for some postponement.
Yeah, the plan is still the same because now it was 29th June, these elections, first elections. Now we continue with other elections as it has been planned by this electoral commission. We are in a campaign for presidential elections, which means we go on, we don't stop.
Is the president, Nkurunziza, is he not concerned that the African Union might not recognize the election?
As I told you, elections are for Burundians. as long as Burundians have seen that these elections were well organized, I think we are most concerned than others.
Thank you very much.
You are welcome. No problem.
Pascal Yabenda is the chair of Burundi's ruling CNDD FDD party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Bujumbura. The man responsible for instigating an attempted coup against former Lesotho Prime Minister Thomas Thabane last August appears to have launched a wave of reprisals, prompting several political leaders to flee. The escalating political violence in Lesotho is threatening crucial trade deals at the center of the country's economy. Gillian Parker reports from Johannesburg.
Following years of political wrangling and feuds between the police and army, Lesotho was plunged into turmoil in August when Army Commander Lieutenant General Tali Kamudi led an attempted coup against then Prime Minister Thomas Thabane. Following the coup attempt, a new seven-party coalition was elected in a snap election in February under Prime Minister Bekalitha Musasidi, who reappointed Kamudi as commander of the Lesotho Defence Force. He replaced Maraparanko Mahau, who was appointed army commander by Thabane last August and was shot dead on June 25th after several Lesotho Defence Force trucks stopped him. The army said that he resisted arrest during an operation to clamp down on mutiny. At least 50 soldiers are facing charges of mutiny for allegedly plotting to assassinate Kamudi. In May, prominent businessman Thabiso Sosin, a political contributor to former Prime Minister Thabane's All Basotho Convention Party, was also shot dead. His death prompted Thabane to flee the country, saying he feared for his safety. Thabane's supporters say the violence in recent months appears targeted at them and they blame Kamudi. US Ambassador to Lesotho, Matthew Harrington, condemned the move to reinstate Kamudi, who he described as a highly polarising figure in a May statement. A US diplomatic source in South Africa told VOA Lesotho risks losing benefits from the African Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA, that provides duty-free access to the US markets. Speaking to VOA in February, Deputy Prime Minister Mutharjia Metsing said the country's industry would collapse without the trade deal.
For us, without that, it will exacerbate the problems that we are having, and they can even be worse than what we have now. If we have all our people all at once, remember those farms are employing more than 30,000 people, and it is doing so much to help us as a country. That is why we will always engage the Americans on this matter.
But the United States could rescind the deal if Lesotho's political violence intensifies. Prime Minister Musasidi has dismissed US and European criticism, saying the main principle guiding countries' relations is that they should desist from interfering in each other's internal or domestic affairs. Gillian Parker for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Former Zambian President Rupi Abanda says he feels vindicated after a court acquitted him on Monday of corruption charges. He had been accused of abusing his authority and personally benefiting from a $2.5 million oil deal with Nigeria and stripped of his presidential immunity. Sakwiba Sikoto, one of the lawyers representing Mr. Banda, says the former president knew all along that the case was politically motivated. Sikoto says now that Mr. Banda has been acquitted, he will seek full restoration of his presidential immunity.
Well, it's certainly a lot of weight off his shoulders. He's been carrying this burden for the last 3 years. And during those 3 years, in the beginning, he had all kinds of restrictions, like not even being able to leave the country as his passport had been taken in. It's only when his health started failing that he was then allowed to travel outside. And then the state became a little bit more relaxed when they did see that, contrary to what the prosecutors were saying, he wasn't a flight risk. And he was not going to run away from the charges because he's always believed and known that he was not guilty of the offense. Right from the beginning, he did state that this was merely a political witch hunt and that there was nothing in terms of an offense. And the ruling today bears that out because it was at the very early stage in the prosecution in that the court even found that there was no need to even put him on his defense. for him to explain anything because the case was so badly handled by the prosecutors.
You mentioned the difficulty he went through while this case was ongoing. I know his presidential immunity was stripped of him. Do you think he wants to get them back?
Yes, I think the next logical step would be for the immunity issue to be reviewed because the whole reason given for the removal of the immunity was based on the charges that he has just been acquitted of. And for him to at least have a sense of complete closure of the matter, I think that restoration of his immunity would be important.
What does he say about the president's belief in the judicial system now in Zambia?
I think that the former president has helped to make people have faith in the judicial system because from the word go, he had said that he had full trust that the judiciary was going to clear him and that he was going to face those charges, which he has done. And he has gotten his day in court and been acquitted.
Sikwabasi Koto is one of the lawyers representing former Zambian President Wurupia Banda. He was speaking with me from Lusaka. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, June 30th. Daybreak Africa time, 16 and a half minutes past the hour. The reinstated Secretary General of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement says South Sudan's warring parties are close to signing a final peace agreement to end the 18 months of fighting in the country. Pagam Amoom says President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar met over the weekend in Nairobi, Kenya, and discussed issues blocking efforts to end the conflict in the country. Amoom says Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta is working with leaders of South Sudan's warring parties to find a lasting solution to the conflict.
We have reached some understanding, and now we have all converged in Nairobi under the auspices of His Excellency President Uhuru Kenyatta to overcome these issues that have been blocking the peace process. There has been some progress that has been achieved, and we are hopeful that we'll be able to sign a peace agreement before July 9th.
What are some of these progress that have been achieved? Could you be specific here?
I would not be able really to go into the details, but I assure you that understanding has been reached and the parties now are closer to sign a peace agreement. The details would be with the mediators of IGAD.
When are you going back to Addis to start the final process? Because July 9th is just around the corner.
His Excellency President Uhuru and the Foreign Minister, Honorable Amina Mohammed, are in contact with the counterpart, the chair of the IGAD, His Excellency, the Prime Minister of Ethiopia, Haile Mariam Desalegn, and the Foreign Minister, for the parties to converge. So we are expecting invitation by the IGAD mediation anytime within this week.
Mr. Pagan, there is a lot of pending issues that are still unaddressed. For instance, the SPLM in opposition have been saying that until and unless the root cause of this conflict is addressed, they are not going to commit themselves into signing a peace agreement.
The three SPLM groups have agreed on the diagnosis of the root causes of the problem and have prescribed a resolution or solution to these problems. And these have been identified and are reflected in the Arusha agreement.
That was Pagan Amoom, the reinstated Secretary General of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement. He was speaking from Nairobi, Kenya, with John Tanza of VOA's South Sudan in Focus program. The Democratic Republic of Congo's government has launched a training program for former child combatants and victims of sexual violence. For VOA, Nick Long reports on plans to help them find a better future.
Nearly 80 people crammed into a small village hall in Nyiragongo territory in eastern Congo on Friday to witness the signing of an agreement to help young victims and perpetrators of recent violence rebuild their lives. The two most important signatures on the document were those of the DRC president's personal representative in charge of the fight against sexual violence and the recruitment of children, Jeanine Mabunda, and of the administrator of Congo's National Institute for Professional Training, Maurice Chikuyi. Speaking through a translator, Chikuyi said he and his Institute for Professional Training colleagues came to the meeting from Kinshasa because they wanted the agreement to be witnessed by local people. Do you want me to sign this document? He asks, to a chorus of approval. Under the agreement, the government will pay the Institute for Professional Training $25,000 to give 2 months of skills training to 75 people, mostly young former combatants or victims of sexual violence. Officially, Jeanine Mabunda's office has a mandate to work for the reintegration of former child soldiers into civilian life. In a sense, that mission is largely accomplished, as the Congolese army demobilized its own underage fighters years ago. Mabunda told reporters that her office and the UN Children's Fund found there was not a single child soldier at any DRC army camp that they visited. There are still many underage combatants and former combatants from eastern Congo's armed groups, however, and sexual violence is still a major problem, although its scale should not be exaggerated, said Mabunda. She cited statistics indicating sexual violence cases reported in eastern DRC fell by 33% between 2013 and last year, from about 15,000 to about 10,000. The UN reports the Congolese security forces' involvement in sexual violence has fallen sharply. The 75 youngsters to be enrolled for training are likely just a first wave, Mabunda said. This training for Nyiragongo is a pilot scheme, she says, and should be repeated in other territories of North Kivu and in other provinces. Thomas Ngumi Jimana is one of the ex-combatants who wants to enroll on a training course. He says most of them want training in agriculture, livestock rearing or carpentry because that is what most people do around here. The government's pledge to spend $25,000 on these training courses comes 2 days after the head of the United Nations mission in Congo, Martin Kobler, raised questions about the government's commitment to reintegrating former combatants. Nick Long for VOA News, Goma.
A United States Congressional Staff delegation is in Zimbabwe on a 2-day visit to assess the political situation in the country with a view of amending the Zimbabwe Democracy Recovery Act of 2001 so that it reflects developments that have taken place in the last 15 years. Erwin Chifera of VOA Zimbabwe Service reports from Harare.
Staff Director Gregory Simpkins of the U.S. House Subcommittee on Africa, Health, Human Rights and International Relations, who is leading the delegation, said there have been some changes since 2001 and certain issues have been overtaken by events.
This trip allows us to gather information that will make it much more fruitful to re-examine Zadera. Some of it, obviously, is overtaken by events. Zimbabwe is no longer involved in the Democratic Republic of Congo. So some things have changed since 2001, obviously. So we would probably look to update it in any event.
Simpkins, whose committee was involved in the crafting of Zidera, said the piece of legislation was not created to favor the opposition, but was enacted to facilitate an environment of fair competition. He, however, said most of the issues raised in Zidera have not been met, as there continues to be lack of respect for human rights, property rights, press freedom, and freedom of association, among other ills. Simpkins noted that the American government wants Zimbabwe to remain stable, hence the re-engagement efforts.
Zimbabwe hasn't been at the top of the list for a long time. It doesn't mean it's forgotten. It just means that there's so many immediate crises that we've had to deal with. But again, those of us who've worked on Zimbabwe issues for a long time never want to see it completely off the table, so we're trying to move it back into the light of examination to see what we should do, what can we do.
He added that after the visit, the U.S. Congress would discuss and come up with a position on Zimbabwe. The visit by Simpkins and Tozzi is a follow-up to the hearings by his committee in the U.S. early this month and another visit by senior State Department officials Dr. Shannon Smith and Stephen Feldstein last month. The two officials said it was important for the opposition to make itself relevant by participating in elections. But Obed Gutu, spokesman of the opposition Movement for Democratic Change, led by Morgan Tsvangirai, said his party's decision to boycott elections was principled and they will stick to it. The European Union lifted some targeted sanctions on Zimbabwe, but the U.S. maintains them, saying they would only be removed if President Robert Mugabe's government improves its human rights record. Reporting from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Twenty-five minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with athletics. South African Willem Coetzen amassed 8,341 points to place second in the decathlon at the IWF Combined Events Challenge in Rattingen, Germany on Sunday. He ranks second overall in the challenge standing with 16,789 points. Guilherme Thierry of Mauritius ranks eighth, while Florent Lombo of the Democratic Republic of Congo is 53rd. Meanwhile, Nigeria's Uhonoma Osazua tops the women's heptathlon ranking with 17,630 points, while Benin's Odile Ahuanawanu is ranked 40th. In Nigeria, Rukpe Rayokan clocked 46.13 seconds as Adeloye Oluwatosin ran 52.48 seconds to win men's and women's 400 meters respectively at the Athletics Federation of Nigeria Golden League meeting in Kaduna City, Kaduna State in north central Nigeria on Saturday. Euphemia Edem prevailed in women's long jump with a leap of 6.48 meters as Divine Oduduru won the 200 meters in 20.80 seconds. Henry Okori won the men's 400 meter hurdles in 51.19 seconds as Glory Nathaniel prevailed in the women's event in 59.29 seconds. Hope Ide triumphed in women's triple jump with a leap of 13.40 meters as Okpara Tedas cleared the bar at 2.10 meters in men's high jump, and Kure Samuel won men's javelin with a throw of 70.21 meters. Moving on to basketball, Egypt edged Iran 62-59 as Canada outclassed Tunisia 93-36 at the men's World Under-19 Basketball Championship in Heraklion, Greece on Sunday. Early on Saturday, Croatia overpowered Egypt 111-68 as Italy beat Tunisia 89-62. Today, Tuesday, Egypt challenged the United States of America as Tunisia face Australia. In volleyball, Algeria dismissed Australia 25-19, 25-22 and 25-13 at the World Women's Volleyball Grand Prix in Tadi Korgan, Kazakhstan on Sunday. Meanwhile, Colombia beat African champions Kenya 25-21, 25-14 and 25-20 in Monterrey, Mexico. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A car bomb killed Egypt's top prosecutor on Monday, destroying his car as he traveled to work in Cairo. Hisham Barakat is the most senior state official killed in militant violence since the country's Islamist government was toppled 2 years ago. And Burundi held parliamentary elections on Monday despite an opposition boycott and criticism from the United Nations and African Union, questioning the free and fair nature of the vote. That is it for this Tuesday, June 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ouman, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good Tuesday.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the Internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, in the past 20 years, 18 African nations have been ravaged by war. Tens of millions of people have been victims of violence. Next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, Straight Talk Africa's Shaka Sali and his guests will take a closer look at the effects of PTSD for survivors of conflict and war. That's next time on VOA Africa.